What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, just a nomination away from winning an EFL award. This week, QPR, we always believed. Previously latent champions Orient finally get their hands on the silverware in League Two. Welcome to Wrexham, and it's Downdale as Rochdale's 102-year stay in the Football League comes to an end. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And a very warm welcome along to this week's episode. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I'm joined by Adrian Clark, who is not happy with the League One team of the year.
How can you not have a right back? What insult to Connor Bradley at Bolton. I think he would have been a very, very good shout to go in there. To have two left backs, Mumba and Leif Davis. Come on. What are they doing?
Pep Guardiola stuff, that, isn't it? Sam Parkin's also with us. Sam, how many awards did you win throughout your illustrious playing career?
Not many, mate. Not many. A few individual ones at Swindon. Whoever did the graphic, Clarkey, as well, I saw yesterday on Twitter, had Clark Harris in the 10 and Windus up front as well. And wasn't it old Santos having a bit of a graveyard shift at left back for Santos? He's not going to get up and down the flank too often. So
I reckon they were on the old Prosecco at this meeting, weren't they? It must have been.
Honestly, listener, we're not bitter about not winning anything. It's fine. We've dealt with it. We'll move on. Right, before we get into today's pod proper, how about this? The guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this podcast. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, next we'll get into the pod proper. Well, we briefly touched on the EFL Awards. Just wanted to mention the winners of the main prizes, i.e. Manager and Player of the Year. Vincent Kompany in the Championship, Stephen Schumacher in League One, and Richie Wellens in League Two. The players, Chuba Akpom, as he prefers to be known, in the Championship, Aaron Collins of Bristol Rovers in League One, and Sam Hoskins of Northampton in League Two. Tricky one, Adrian. I always think manager-wise, because essentially you just give it to the guy who wins the league, don't you? But I mean, there's not much debate, I don't think, about any of these. Obviously, Wellens is already a champion. Kompany's going to be. And Stephen Schumacher, we've spoken many times about the fact that he's competing with real heavyweights in League One. So I think he's well worth that award too, right?
Absolutely, yeah. No complaints at all about the manager choices. Kompany could very well be the manager of the year for the entirety of English football. Schumacher, after what happened to Plymouth last season, with the heartbreak of missing out on the playoffs, has done amazingly. And Richie Wellens, again, new to his role at Leyton Orient, has smashed it out of the park, hasn't he? So no, they've absolutely nailed those three managers for me.
Sam, you'll be pleased to see strikers dominating the Player of the Year awards, no doubt. The Chuba Akpom story is a really interesting one, isn't it? Because he's kind of bounced around looking for a permanent home for a while. And boy, has he found it. And a manager who really seems to get him in Michael Carrick.
Yeah, definitely. Another opportunity for me to tell you about the experiment when Jim McGilton tried to play me as a number 10. Yeah, lasted 45 minutes in a pre-season friendly against the Dutch outfit. So I've got so much admiration for Akpom. Obviously, came through at Arsenal. Undoubted ability. You can see his technical qualities, receiving the ball, the way he finishes. And to be transferred into this new position this year, huge credit to Michael Carrick. But it's about the player, isn't it? And producing regularly. He seems to have enjoyed arriving late into the box. And yeah, I've said a few times as well previously, like when I played for the school coming through, or, you know, the county and stuff like that, and played a little bit deeper, I love that role, being able to see things a little bit differently. And he's doing it in the Championship, which is no mean feat. He's been phenomenal. The regularity of the goals has surprised me. And he's just broken a record, hasn't he? The consecutive goals in home games. So phenomenal season, and you wouldn't bank against him doing it at Wembley. He's in such red hot form.
Congratulations to all the winners then. We got some stuff sorted in the Football League over the weekend as well. Namely, in League One, Plymouth, Ipswich, Sheffield and Barnsley already assured of at least a playoff place. Leyton Orient, the champions in League Two. Rochdale relegated and Wrexham promoted. Adrian, when it comes to Wrexham, I feel like they're just going to waltz their way through League Two next season, because the squad is already stacked with players who could cut it in League One, never mind the National League.
Yeah, I think that Wrexham will be playing Championship football within five or six seasons. I think that this is a club that's got the right ownership, really like them. I really do. I think, you know, having watched the documentary, but even every time they sort of do speak, they're very warm characters, and they just must be so adored in that city. And yeah, they've got already an excellent team. I think that team would probably be in the top three of League Two this season as it stands, but they'll improve on it, no doubt. So yeah, I'd fancy them strongly to go up next year, and yeah, maybe after a couple of seasons or more in League One, I think they could reach the championship. You know, the likes of Yeovil have been there before, Peterborough United, of course. So if they can do it, then so too can Wrexham. So yeah, really exciting days for them, and I'm chuffed for Phil Parkinson as well, because he had a couple of rough gigs, didn't he, where it didn't work out for him. See, the Sunderland one was a plum job, and they got rid of him quite brutally. So for him to land at Wrexham, risk for his career, but he's ridden it out. And yeah, I was really pleased for him, because he sort of wears his heart on his sleeve, doesn't he, Phil? I like him.
A gaffer and a team you know well, Sam, are Leighton Orient and Richie Wellens. We had assumed that they were going to get the job done eventually. They've done that now. They are the champions. Northampton only need a maximum of 2 points from their last two games for promotion. But for Orient and Wellens in particular, this is a significant achievement. And as we've sort of alluded to before, for Wellens, it's one in the eye for Salford, isn't it? Because they were brutal in the way they got rid of him. And he's really showed them what they've been missing.
Yeah, definitely. Every time I see Richie speak, I'm engrossed, really. Even when he hot-footed it to the ITV studios on Saturday night to be on the show, obviously, after probably celebrating that victory and not having too much time to think about it. He's just someone who understands football. I think during his playing career, he orchestrated the teams that he was in from midfield, you know, a communicator. And I think he's taken that into his managerial career. I was really impressed with him at Swindon in the short term that he had there. And obviously didn't see eye to eye with the owners at Salford in terms of the playing style, I would put that down to. And then Doncaster just had a bad hand in terms of the squad. And he spoke about that post-match. He spoke about how important the players are to achieving when you're a manager. And at Leighton Orient, he's got a good group, but I think he'll want to improve in probably the forward areas. He'll want to get some more goal threat into that side, despite them, you know, romping to this league success. But I couldn't be more impressed with what he's done in the early years of his managerial career. And undoubtedly, you know, Clarkey spoke about the opportunity for people to move up the ladder. He'll be in the championship, and maybe one day he could be a Premier League manager, Richie.
Rochdale, a long way from the Premier League. They're in the National League as of next season, Adrian. Not a surprise. Mm-hmm. They lost 26 of their 44 games, the 26 at Stockport of the weekend that sent them down. I guess they've got to be looking at the likes of Oldham and Scunthorpe and thinking, what have we got to do to not be them?
Yeah, it's really sad, especially when a club has been a member of the EFL, you know, the hallowed 92 for all of those years, over a century. To just lose it, you know, on the back of one bad season, it's heartbreaking, isn't it, for them and for the fans. And I'm still for two up, two down. I've got to be honest, because I think the EFL status is precious, and that I think it needs to be different to most leagues, and it means so much to people at these clubs to go down, and people will lose their jobs, etc. So it's I'm happy with the setup as it is, and I feel for them. I don't think they're a car crash of a club in terms of the way they're run, so they should stabilise. Don't think we'll see what's happened at Scunthorpe, where they've gone down again. I don't think that will happen to Rochdale. Hopefully they can be nice and competitive next season. They certainly play good football, and I think that in the National League they'll do all right. Actually, I do. I think they'll be there or thereabouts.
All right, well, best of luck to them for next season. The second relegation place will be filled by Hartlepool unless they win their last two games and either Crawley or Harrogate lose their remaining games. Hartlepool also need to overhaul one of them on goal difference. You keeping up with that, listener? Yeah, well done. All right, next today, we'll do our weekend review. Let's start in the Championship. Shocking stuff at Turf Moor as QPR actually won a game, and it was only at the home of the champions in waiting, Burnley, who hadn't lost at home all season before Saturday. Let's hear from a giddy Gareth.
It's an unbelievable feeling. Those boys have given me everything, absolutely everything. I couldn't ask for any more today. The build-up, the tactics we put in place, everything. You know, we're not going to come here and match Burnley for football because they're superb at it. They're on top of the league. They've not even lost it. I say possession can do one. It does not. It does not win you games. You know, it's factual. This does not win you games. You know, it's, I think it's 51% says it does, 49% says it doesn't. It's just so close on possession. It's moments. It's moments and people. And those moments today, I mean, they were awesome. The blocks, the tackles, the saves, people putting their absolute head on the line. Everything, you know, just on the line to stop shots, to stop. And there was one in the first half there where I think there was a shot at it, Rob Dickey. There was a shot at it, Senna Dieng. And it came back and it hit the crossbar and went out. And moments like that, you've got to think, this could be our day.
Not quite as giddy, Sam Parkin, but you must have had to set your face to stun when Chris Martin glanced that one in on 87 minutes.
Yeah, when it went back to 1-1, I thought that Burnley would probably go on and win the game. But I wasn't surprised that QPR got something at the weekend. It's typical Rangers. You know, just a few weeks ago, they got smashed by Blackpool 6-1 away from home. This is what they've always done. This is QPR who were during Swindon Town's one season in the Premier League, lost twice to them. I remember the Swindon Town supporters in fancy dress on the last day of the season, winning 3-1 at Loftus Road. It's what I've been used to all these years. So, yeah, nice victory. Nice way for them to kind of pull themselves out of that immediate danger. And I think they'll get... It's probably a point they're going to need, I would say now, in the games against Stoke away from home and then Bristol City at home. And they've come through a really tough period of games. Five games against teams in the top 10, all going for a promotion. I wouldn't say these are the best possible fixtures, but I think they're good enough to get the points that they need now. And I normally leave this up to Clarkey, but some of the numbers from the game are just sensational. 663 passes to 153. Burnley completed 592, 89%. QPR completed 83 passes, 54%. And this blew my mind. I had to double check it. I had to go over it about 10 times, actually. Timo Robinson, midfield player, he's playing in a two at the moment. He had seven touches, 68 minutes he played for. Well, he attempted one pass and he gave it away. And I'm not having to go at Timo Robinson because he's not a sitting midfielder in a two-man midfield, but seven touches in 68 minutes. Rob Dickey, 15 touches. Five of those were clearances, so he made nine passes. For a bit of comparison, Harwood Bellis, obviously Burnley's online centre-half, 113 touches, 103 passes. I mean, this was, again, as they said on the TV on Saturday night, this was just bad, bad luck for Burnley. They had copious amounts of chances. QPR obviously sat in. They couldn't go toe-to-toe in terms of trying to play. The one alteration from the Norwich game was Jamal Lowe played off Lyndon Dykes. Adoma came in off the right-hand side. So it was pretty much the same team. And yeah, they had to ride their luck incredibly. Scored two brilliant goals, it must be said. I really enjoyed Martin's winner. He was actually out by the corner flag when the short corner was taken, or when the free kick was taken, whatever it was, and kind of just ambled into the box. Jamal Lowe almost picked him out with a really nice flat delivery. Perfect for the striker. Doesn't even need to get off the ground. Just angled it into the far corner. So yeah, massive, massive 3 points. And I think it's 1 point's probably going to be enough. Reading have got a couple of really tricky fixtures against teams around them, and QPR look like they're somehow going to survive.
Away to Stoke and at home to Bristol City to finish for Rangers. So QPR not going down without a fight. Same can be said for Blackpool. They earned a 1-0 win at Birmingham. It means they're 3 points from safety with two to play. Kevin Long got the assist for the goal here, didn't he? Clarkey, the Birmingham defender. They've only won back-to-back games once all season, Blackpool. They're probably going to need to do that, but they've got Millwall and Norwich to finish with. Norwich, maybe not as tricky as one might assume. Do you think they can get out of it?
I would have said no, but Millwall are out of sorts. Norwich are kind of all over the place. The fans are revolting there. So maybe. You've got to say that Stephen Dobby has come in and made that impact that you're looking for. Two wins from four games. They didn't play well in this game. In the first half, Blackpool were rubbish. They were passive, didn't really lay a glove on a half-pace Birmingham side. They had to sort of ride their luck. But they stayed in the game, and that's sometimes what you got to do. And the mistake from Kevin Long was shocking with the sort of 50p pass, where it came off at a wrong angle. But I've got to say that Neil Etheridge, the goalkeeper, in my opinion, bottles it. going for the 50-50 with Rodgers. He goes with his feet, where I think he's got to stick his arms out and go with his head there. I think he's got a little bit windy and backed off of it, and they punished it with the goal. So, yeah, I think they'll be delighted, Blackpool. The centre-halves were great, Curtis Nelson and Jordan Thornley. Keeper pulled off a couple of worldies. There was an amazing scramble where really they should have conceded, but somehow they kept the ball out. So, yeah, well done, Blackpool. Little stat on them. In 36 of 44 championship games, they've either scored no goals or one goal this season, Blackpool, which is 36 of 44. It's a high percentage. If they're to survive with that kind of record, I think they need to give all of their defenders some kind of survival bonus, because, you know, they're very, very reliant on keeping things tight at the back. Yeah, disappointing, I think, in midfield in the game. Fiorini and Patino, two ball players, a little bit weak. But the defence did great, and the striker, Morgan Rodgers, the winger, really worked his socks off up front, and by all accounts had a great game. So, yeah, there's life in Blackpool yet, but for Birmingham, yeah, one to forget. They were just off it. One thing I want to say very quickly on Birmingham, Joe Bellingham, 17, brother of Jude, got 78 minutes in the game, and he looked good. In the past, he's looked a bit nervy, not really impacted the game, but in this game, very dangerous, making runs into the box, and he looks like he's filled out a little bit. So yeah, Joe Bellingham, interesting to see if he plays in the remaining games.
Yeah, big weekend for those of us who want the battle for survival to go right to the wire. Wigan beating Millwall by 2-1. This is how they did it.
Callum Lang squared across. In the championship yet. He's the coolest man on the ground, Taylor Asgard. I don't think it's quite dawned on him yet what that goal might mean to this football club.
What do you think, Sam? Is this too little, too late? They're what, 4 points behind with two games left to play? And also, even if they do go down, do you think Sean Maloney's done enough to prove that he's the man to bring him back up again?
I would say yes, actually, this morning. Could change after the next two games. I think it probably is too little, too late, considering they're reliant on things going awry elsewhere. But yeah, back-to-back wins for him now. And I think he's definitely got them better defensively. I think that's clear. Last eight games conceded only the 7 goals. I think the one criticism that's been consistent, certainly over the last few defeats before they went on this little mini run, was that he'd been too pragmatic in terms of the setup in some must-win games. He's not put them out with enough offensive talent, to be quite frank. So I think there was a bit of a shift here. McGuinness came in to help out in that regard with Keane and Lang, so a bit of a front three. And it paid off. The first half was dire. I think Millwall scored with their first attack as well. And Wigan scored with their only shot on the target in the first half. Second half, it opened up, and that was probably the predicament that both of the teams obviously were in that second half. It was a must win for both. And yeah, credit to Sean Maloney for shuffling the pack a little bit. Millwall, so little threat from them. I think we questioned whether they were going to have enough goals when Fleming and Bradshaw aren't consistently doing the business, and 3 goals in their last 7 games tells the story. I think Creswell's probably been a miss at both ends as well. Brings them a bit of added attacking impetus from set pieces, and defensively, Millwall haven't been as good without him either. So it looks like they're going to fall short. Wigan got themselves a chance, but yeah, I could see Maloney being given an opportunity next year to start fresh in League One.
Right, so he might get an opportunity in League One. Tony Mowbray, look, he gets Sunderland up into the playoff places. They win 2-1 at West Brom. Lo and behold, here's a tweet from Fabrizio Romano on Monday morning. Exclusive: Sunderland appreciate Francesco Farioli as new head coach for next season. He's on top of their list. Farioli considered talented coach. He's only 34 years old. Clubs in Italy, Portugal, England and Turkey have approached him. I don't know if Tony Mowbray's on Twitter, but he'd be pretty narked if he read that this morning, wouldn't he, given that he's got them into the playoff places?
What are they doing? Seriously, what are Sunderland thinking there? You got a great manager. He's getting a tune out of this team. He's got them into the playoff positions. And you're talking to other managers, or you're looking to appoint somebody else. I mean, I think that would be incredibly unfair on Tony Mowbray, who had a similar thing happen to him at Blackburn Rovers, didn't he? Where I think he got the max out of that team. And then, you know, they just didn't want to keep him. They wanted to go with a younger model with John Dow Thomason, who's done well. But has he done better than Mowbray? Don't know. Not really. It's been similar, hasn't it? So, yeah, ridiculous. I didn't know about that, Matt. So, I don't understand. This was a good win. Really good win. They controlled the game, had a lot of the ball. But what makes this such a good win, aside from it being a Dennis Sirkin double, which doesn't happen too often... two good goals, by the way, from him, is that basically they've got no centre-halves. You know, they've had to really sort of adapt, and they went with Denver Hume, Luke O'Neill and Dennis Sirkin, basically two full-backs and a midfielder with their three centre-halves in this game. Not much height in the team at all, up against one of the best set-piece teams in the division. And they nullified them, no problem, but they nullified them through good football, and they kept them away from their goal expertly, and when they did come to set pieces, they did ever so well. I did read that Tony Mowbray credited the goalkeeper coach at Sunderland and said, look, he's had sleepless nights this week, totally revamping their entire defensive setup from set pieces, because he said, we've lost Ballard, we've lost Danny Bart, we had no height, we had to work out what's the best way to keep West Brom out from scoring from a corner, because they're almost nailed on. So they've gone from a mixture of zonal and man-to-man to purely zonal. The only one that they picked up was Semi Ajayi, and they did a great job. And he was as proud, I think, of that as he was of the performance. So, yeah, well done, Sunderland. You know, no Ross Stewart, no centre-halves, lost Ellis Sims, but there they are still fighting for a playoff berth. Yeah, I think they had a great season.
Yeah, and it's big to win at the Hawthorns as well. West Brom were unbeaten there for 6 months. That stretches back 13 games. They're only 2 points off the playoffs with a game in hand, so not totally over for them either. And now there was a result of significance at both ends of the table. That's where we're going to start in League One. Cambridge got the better. Plymouth got the better of Cambridge at Home Park. A 3-1 Pilgrims win means they're top, and they have a 2-point buffer plus a game in hand on third place Sheffield Wednesday. So, Sam, is Stephen Schumacher just worried about the curse of the Manager of the Year award, making everything collapse at the last?
I don't think you can predict anything in this league. You really can't. Obviously, it was the teams that are challenging in command at the weekend in terms of them all getting maximum points. But I think there's going to be some twists and turns. Ipswich got that tough run in, a couple of tricky away games. Sheffield Wednesday have been miles off it. Plymouth, yes, on paper. Bristol Rovers tomorrow. Burton at home, Port Vale away. But Burton have turned over some of the biggest teams in the division recently. Port Vale at Vale Park, tricky game. Last games of the season. You feel like the teams that are going for the championships, that are going for the playoffs, are going to roll over teams that are in the middle. Doesn't happen because of the freedom that it presents to those players that, yeah, they're on the beach, but they might just take on a volley from 30 yards. They might just have the shackles off, might put some fringe players in. The lads that have travelled up and down the country all season, not had many minutes, get an opportunity in the last couple of games. And sometimes that freshness and that freedom, it can be really difficult. So it's really hard to predict. I thought this was a good, very good Plymouth performance in terms of creating chances. I thought Cambridge's game plan in the first half was pretty good. Mark Bonner seems to have shuffled the pack in recent weeks and games, especially when they're playing the big hitters away from home. He goes to the back three. He had a front three here, though. So I think there was an onus to, of course, keep it solid, but have that counter-attacking threat as well, which you need at this stage of the season when the points are so pivotal for different reasons. But yeah, Plymouth, I think Callum Wright scoring at Shrewsbury, starting, scored within 15 minutes. Joe Edwards scored in that game as well, again here. And I think we're seeing that options in attack again come into prevalence. Ryan Hardy stretching the play, getting an assist early, 65 minutes, his number's up. And Niall Ennis comes on and he's now had a goal contribution in the last three games. So that's really relevant again, the options in attack for Plymouth. Probably over, I wouldn't say Ipswich, but maybe over Sheffield Wednesday. So yeah, that's always been something that they've been particularly strong with. Cambridge not going to be defined by this result. Burton away, Accrington away, Forest Green at home. Obviously, again, on the face of it, three really good fixtures. And I wouldn't say momentum, but yeah, in terms of form, Cambridge, when you look at the teams around them and Morecambe, they're the two probably down the rear end of the League One table that are in a little bit of form, and you could see them getting some results there.
Go on, the use. Go on. Mm-hmm. Go on, Cambridge.
Sam Smith, 6-6. That's crept up on me as well. Because he got a hat-trick early part of the season, and I think he'd only scored one more or maybe two more. 6-6 for him, and I had a little look. Just short of 4 shots per game right now. So he's in the mood. Previous 6, 2.5. So he's peppering the target, notching. And that's probably what they've missed for, what, a year? 18 months, maybe? Ironside didn't do a bad job last season, but you're talking back to the days of Paul Mullen, aren't you, for a real regular goal scorer?
Yeah, that's invaluable when you're down that end of the table. And as we mentioned, Plymouth, Bristol Rovers and Burton to come for them back-to-back home games. They're so good on their own patch that we'll see if they can get it done. Not so good on their own patch. Peterborough, not on Saturday at least. Anyway, beaten 3-0 at London Road by Ipswich. That ensures Ipswich stay second, a point ahead of Sheffield, who squeezed past Exeter. 90 goals now for Ipswich, Adrian. The most in the country. We said they got the toughest run in. Maybe it doesn't really matter if they're in this kind of form.
They're an incredible side, aren't they, at the moment? This was so professional, the way they dispatched Peterborough United. I think that Darren Ferguson might have some regrets. He sort of changed the system. I know that Thompson was missing at right back, and he was a bit worried about Broadhead. So he, instead of putting Ward there, he's gone to a back three, and then he ripped that up in the second half. So tactically, maybe Fergie overthought the game, but Ipswich... Ipswich did well. I mean, Christian Wharton had to still make some good saves in the game. He played ever so well. But yeah, I mean, this just looks fantastic, doesn't it? High pressure game. Bang. 3-0 away to Peterborough. Got some great stats on Ipswich that I just want to chuck out there. Since Valentine's Day morning, Ipswich have conceded a goal once every 535 minutes, basically once every 6 games, which is just crazy. 10 clean sheets from 12. They've had 78 more shots in open play than anyone else in League One. Impressive. Doubly impressive when you consider they've faced 54 fewer shots in open play than anyone else as well. So at both ends of the pitch, not too shabby. You think, well, what are they like at set pieces? Oh, they've scored 3 more than everyone else from set pieces as well, Ipswich. Can they press? Yeah, they got the most shots from high turnovers. And in terms of build-up play, in League One, the range of build-up attacks, which is basically a patient attack that ends with a shot, the range for teams this season is between 4 and 59. Ipswich have had 88. So they're a complete team at that level. And I'll be staggered if they don't end up in the top two.
He's an Ipswich fan again.
Yeah. I've always been attracted by you.
Well, especially because admin at Ipswich clearly listens to the pod, because they tweeted yesterday, our last 12, won 11, drawn 1, scored 34, conceded 2, points 34. They're taking the Clark metric.
What about this, Sam? Connor Chaplin, do you think he's been a bit hard done by not getting the League One Player of the Year? I think Aaron Collins, obviously the only player that's got double-figure goals and assists. It feels like that he's lucked out a little bit in picking up that award.
Yeah,
some of the other players.
I agree with you, mate, because I thought that would be one of the questions from Matt this morning. So I had a little look over it. I looked at the teams that are going for the automatic promotion mainly. So yeah, I think he'll feel a little bit hard done by it. Although it is quite refreshing, because I was scandalously left out a few times when I was at Swindon, and we were mid-table obscurity. So yeah. I think it's unusual for someone who's not challenging to probably get the top prize, but he is a phenomenal talent. I think a very, very good player. He's tailed off, hasn't he, really? I think his goal the other day was his first in a number of weeks, and maybe even months. So yeah, a little bit fortunate maybe.
Yeah, just to give a bit of credit to Renegade Statman, great stats on social media. It says, for the first season since 1981-82, Ipswich have got two players that have gone past 20 goals in the season with them, Ladapo and Chaplin. The players in question back in the 80s, Alan Brazil and John Walk.
So I was going to say John Walk.
Absolute legends. Yeah, wow. they were two of my faves, I've got to say, as a junior blue growing up in Suffolk. John Walk was my favourite. He was probably my first sort of footballing hero. Great tash, great goals from midfield, superb.
Ipswich always had former players floating about, not even just match days, during the week at training, and John Walk joined in a few times, Clarkie.
Oh, yeah.
Small-sided games, could still play.
Could he?
Big goals, you know, like seven-a-side type, so probably about, what, 40, 50 yards, the pitch, and yeah, he's still just like people setting him and he's just bending them in from range.
D6, he's not young. He can't be young. He looked about 40 in the 80s, so yeah, I don't know what he is now.
Might be escape to the Championship rather than escape to victory for Ipswich, the way they're going. In League Two, Mansfield gave their playoff hopes a boost while simultaneously hurting Stevenage's chances of going up automatically. 1-0 to the home side at Field Mill. Stags' first team coach, Andy Garner, was pleased.
What a f***ing effort that is, by the way.
So they, Sam, are 8 points out. They're eighth, rather, outside the playoffs on goal difference. Only 4 points off third Stevenage, with three to play. They've got a hungover at Leighton Orient to play on Tuesday before Harrogate at home and Colchester away. So, I mean, you can either take the angle of our Mansfield going to make the playoffs, or you can tell me if Stevenage are bottling it, and also why their away record is so bad. They've won once on the road since October, and two of their remaining three games are away from home.
I will tell you on Wednesday morning, because I'm seeing Stevenage at Swindon tomorrow night. They're not as free scoring as they were. A lot of tight games, I think three draws, maybe even 3-1-1s in the last six. They've won one of those and had two narrow defeats. So, yeah, real tight affairs at the moment. But, yes, yeah, the goal scoring, maybe that's not been as consistent and as prevalent as it was early part of the season. Real tight game here. They had to work hard for it, Mansfield, you know, especially late on. And I think there's been a bit of a switch at Mansfield. I would consider Mansfield as quite an open side, quite high scoring games, and you're never really sure what you're going to get with them. And I think that's probably why we've been a bit frustrated over the last few years, Matt, when we've fancied them heavily. Well, you fancied them heavily. They lost 5-2 to Salford, if you remember, a few weeks ago. Since then, nine matches unbeaten, conceding 9 in 11 games. That was a third clean sheet in that run at the weekend. Quite a few tight games in there. I think they're defending better. I think Alfie Kilgore, who came in January, who was a young kid at Bristol Rovers, has made a massive difference. He was sensational at the weekend. He's made 18 appearances, two defeats in that time, the aforementioned Salford game and away at Northampton. So I think defensively they're better. Wallace in front of the back four as well, another big plus. Good experience, I think, for this stage of the season. Players that have been there, like Quinn and Perch, which will be stabilising influences on the dressing room. So, yeah, I expect them to make it into the playoffs, and that'll be a really good season to recover from where they were last year. Keeler Dunn credited with the goal at the weekend, another really good January signing. It went off James Gale, so I'm not sure if he's going to keep that one. Young striker, and it would have been 2-2 for him, so the old dubious goals panel, should they have existed in the EFL, should be looking at it, because that one's Gales and not Keeler Dunn's, I'm afraid. But good win.
Both. Briefly, Clarkie, some big games coming up midweek. People will have maybe even been to a couple by the time they hear this. Tuesday, you got Blackburn, Burnley, Barnsley, Ipswich, and we mentioned Mansfield against Leighton Orient. And we've also got Sheffield, West Brom. They just need to win, don't they? And then they're guaranteed second place. And that massive Rotherham, Cardiff game on Thursday too.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it is a big week. It's a shame we sort of can't cover it. But yeah, it's the game in hand week, basically. Yeah, you're right. The Rotherham-Cardiff ones are really interesting. Basically, the winner pretty much stays up. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I'm at Rotherham versus Middlesbrough on Bank Holiday Monday. So if Rotherham lose to Cardiff, then that will become a huge game. Yeah, Wednesday night, Sheffield United can get themselves promoted. So keep your eye on that one. And yeah, look, that Barnsley-Ipswich game, massive Tuesday. You've got Oxford, have got their game in hand against Cheltenham. Can they get themselves out of the mess? And Plymouth entertaining Bristol Rovers, huge. Yeah, there's big games everywhere you look. And for Stevenage, that Swindon game is massive that Sam's going to, because they kind of have to win. Everyone else is breathing down their necks. So yeah, good midweek of action.
Enjoy it if you're going to a game. Next today, we're going to do our scouting reports. Okay, this is the whole purpose of the scouting report for me, because I have to be honest, listener, I had never heard of either of the players we're going to talk about today. But I can tell you, Adrian, that Sori Kaba is a Guinea international on loan at Cardiff from Midtjylland. He's played in the Champions League qualifiers and scored in the Europa League for them this season. What's he been doing since he's been in South Wales?
Great knowledge, Matt. Well done, that is superb. Sori Kaba. They love him at Cardiff. They love him. And probably understandably, because they've been crying out for a hero, haven't they, for a long time now, Cardiff City. Not a lot has been happening there in terms of having stuff to cheer about. But Kaba scored 8 goals in 11 starts, one every 122 minutes. That's tidy. That is really, really impressive. I don't think his goals have earned Cardiff many points, maybe a couple. So they've not been crucial goals, but he's made a big, big impact. He's a big lad. He's a monster of a centre forward. Only Andy Carroll, Jordan Hugel and Lukas Jukovic win more aerial duels than Kaba. So you can tell from that what sort of player he is. And I was looking at his goals, a lot of headers in there. A lot of headers. And what I like about him, he's a bit like Sam Parkin back in the day. He's got good movement for a target man centre forward. What he does when he gets on the shoulder of a defender, he doesn't just jog. He absolutely goes for it. He pelts it in behind a defender in the hope that he'll be picked out. And Cardiff have been picking him out very, very well. He makes really good runs off the shoulder. He's got excellent awareness, stays in space. And when balls come into the box, he's a menace. And 8 and 11 is decent, isn't it? Playing for a Cardiff side that aren't exactly the most creative in the division. So yeah, look out for this guy. Can they sign him? Can they keep Kaba in the summer? They want to, and I think he might want to stay. But as far as I'm aware, Cardiff are still under a transfer embargo. Can only really sign free transfers, which probably rules him out. I think other Championship sides will be looking at this lad and saying, yeah, we'll have a piece of him next year. He reminds me a little bit of Daryl DK with that impression that he made at Barnsley. I think that he will be a wanted man, a little bit like DK. So yeah, Kaba, I don't think we'll have seen the last of him in English football when this loan spell ends. He's been great.
Nice to have another Kaba in there as well. Thought Steve might be the last Kaba off the rank in terms of Football League players, but it turns out not. Sam, you've gone for Louis Apare, which is probably not how you say his name, which again shows you my ignorance of this particular player, who's been one of the better cobblers this season.
Yeah, he's a Scotsman. Well, he's got a French passport as well. It's an interesting backstory. I'm going to tell it for you, Matt, because he was in a youth academy called AM Soccer, somewhere up in Scotland, and it was run by Austin McPhee.
Oh, yeah, I know his nanny, that guy, yeah.
Who's now the set-piece coach at Aston Villa, I believe. I worked with him at St Mirren when he was a first-team coach there. So, and he's always been involved in, I think, football on the continent, and he's had contacts all around the globe, Austin. He tried to get me a move to America in my final years, which he didn't achieve, unfortunately for me. But this lad, Louis Apare, had a trial at AS Roma, I think, because of Austin McPhee. But he pitched up at Dundee United, did really well there. He was playing as a winger for Dundee United. And there was speculation that Steven Gerrard wanted to take him to Rangers. But he's pitched up at Northampton. I think he's been there about 18 months now, maybe 2 seasons. And he's a converted winger. So he's playing up front. Stay with me, listener, because if Kaba's goal return was impressive, this is not. He started 35, come on another 6, so 41 appearances, 8 goals and 4 assists. But as Clarkey says, this guy's a presser. He's a pressing machine. It's about his work ethic, what he does for the team is why he's getting picked. But up until Saturday's game against Harrogate, he'd scored in the last 3 home games. Coming into really good form, end of the season, 4 goals in his last 8. So I went back and had a look at the goals throughout the season and a few of the stats and what have you. His goals, his 8 goals, have been worth 15 points. Oof. For Northampton. And I am all over that. all over that. I think there's only one maybe that wasn't a winner. There's one that was a draw, one that was maybe got him a point somewhere. But his return has been so profitable for them. Obviously, he's been in the shadow a little bit of Sam Hoskins, and rightly so, because he's hit, I think, 20-odd and just scooped the Player of the Year award. But I like the look of this guy. There's a bit of the Brereton Diaz about him, not just the Barnett, not just the backstory. He can shift. He's mobile. He used to be a winger as well. So he's probably learning the position a little bit. But he's got a number of tap-ins this year, so some scruffy goals. It's not all running onto things, but he seems to make his own luck by putting the opponent under pressure, nicking it high, and invariably getting a shot off. So we'll see if he can do it in what looks like League One next season.
All right, let's keep an eye on those two then. Sori Kaba and Louis Apire/Apare, the subjects of this week's scouting reports. All right, real talk, listener. I've got a train to catch, so we're going to skip Tweet of the Week with apologies to Reese Hughes of Tranmere, who was delighted to get his first senior goal, hands in the air emoji, 3 points to top it off, fingers doing the okay thing emoji. Sam would have given it a 6. Adrian maybe would have stretched to a 7. Before we go, a reminder that the guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. Here's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Last word to you then, Adrian. Tell people how they can follow us on social media.
Yeah, get involved. Yeah, look, the numbers are growing. Steady increase week on week. At What the EFL, it's easy to remember, on Instagram and on TikTok. And we'll put out videos from the show. We'll try and get some bonus content soon. On Twitter, it's backwards. It's at EFL What the, and we'll sort of, you know, notify you of any content that we've got going on there as well.
And as ever, if you want to give us a 5-star review and a nice message on your preferred podcast platform of choice, that'll help other EFL fans find the pod as well, and we will appreciate it. We'll be back with another show next week, but that'll do it for today. Thanks to Adrian and to Sam and to you for joining us as well. We'll catch up with you soon. Bye for now.